Muddy Knees Media.
Hello and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Coming up, it was a record-ending weekend after Rangers finally conceded a goal, and Hibs also conceded a goal from open play. All's well at Motherwell again, and it was another meat fest of goals with Shankland and Serrano with the pick of the weekend sizzlers. I'm Andrew Slaven, and once again I'm joined by JJ Bull of The Telegraph and Motherwell's Laura Brannan. How are we all?
Yes.
Meat fest. I thought you would like that, JJ.
Yes.
Lamb Shankland and Serrano ham. There you go.
Oh, that's why Lamb Shankland. I get it. I see. I got the Serrano bit.
For Lawrence, of course.
Yeah.
But we'll get stuck into that later on. JJ, how are you feeling? Obviously, it was the Brannan Bull derby yesterday. Sunday. Aberdeen, pretty pish. Horrible, to be honest.
Yeah, they definitely lost.
Yep. Brannan's absolutely Cheshire catting on the Zoom chat that we've got right now.
It has been a good week.
It has been a good week.
Yeah.
And a long time coming.
Well, later on, we're also going to be speaking to AFP's Kieran Cannon to find out about the clubs that are in European qualification this week. But before all of that, there's some more games to discuss.
For the rest of this month being September 2020, you can take out a subscription to The Athletic for the frankly ridiculous price of just £1 a month. That's unrivaled football writing and analysis from the very best people in the business, a brand spanking new breaking news service, and ad-free versions of each Athletic podcast, all for just £1 a month. Go to theathletic.com/Scottish Show to get started.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Little chip from Boyle's brilliant, and Hibs are level. Christian Deitch, they've just begun to get themselves back into this match. That is borderline offside. It's so tight, and Christian Deitch scores his third of the season.
Right, so a pretty good watch at Easter Road. Hibs breaking Rangers' defensive duck after Dre Wright drove the ball between McLaughlin's legs. Morelos equalised just before half-time. Scott Arfield then put Rangers ahead before Christian Deitch rose the highest to head in and restrict Rangers to a point. So did you guys catch this game? Because I watched all of it and I was really, really impressed. Two teams really kind of at the top of their game, fighting it out, and it was a great game to watch, and with plenty of goals. I was very happy.
I thought Hibs took the game to Rangers at times, which is like you'd think a lot of teams would sit back and try and hit them on the counter, but they were trying to really push them high, and things like playing the playing wing back so you could try and keep Barisic and Tavernier back, because they're always so narrow, Rangers, and they're like playing Ryan Kent and Hadji as wide forwards. They're basically playing it in the 10 space, aren't they, to either side of the striker rather than wide, so then you get all your width from your fullbacks. And I think some of it worked.
But I think what was interesting, they really frustrated, you spoke about how forward-thinking Ryan Kent has been this season, and just how influential he's been, but he was so limited in getting forward and playing forward passes and moving into space. It was really condensed in the middle of the park. I think Hibs were just really, really structured.
I thought Gogic was
where they,
superb
where they
again.
Needed to beef up areas of the pitch. Yeah. Gogic was excellent.
Man, he's so good. We keep talking about him. He's really, really good. Also, Paul McGinn has been magic for Hibs since he's joined.
Yeah, I agree. Like,
properly, really, really, really decent. And Boyle,
so was Kevin Nisbet. Nisbet was tracking news. Back. His defensive work rate was unbelievable at times.
There was the, I don't know, what do you think of Chris Boyd at halftime said that Paul Hanlon should be banished to the Shadow Realm for his elbow on a...
So I watched this, I don't know if you saw this as well, Laura, but I watched it really closely, and his argument was that, and he was saying it with some, you know, real intent, like, I know what I'm
talking
about. He
was wound up, yeah.
So you can see, just there, he lifts his hand. And he puts an elbow. But actually, if you look at it from I can't remember what the angle is. It doesn't matter anyway. But his arm actually brushes the shoulder of Arfield, which then elevates his arm which then means his elbow hits him in the face. Oh, so right. There was no...
You've really analysed this, I like it.
Oh yeah, because it wasn't a red card. It was a yellow because it's dangerous and you're putting your arm up, but it was a yellow card, it wasn't a red card. Sky were also quite negative on Yanis Hadji's performance in this game. What did you guys make of him? Because I thought he was very good too. I did look at some of the numbers. You know, he was second in the passing ratings. I think it was something like 34 passes in the game.
As in numbers or?
Yes, yeah, exactly. I think the lowest number of passes was from Morelos, and he was second to that. But some of the passes that he did make were always really, really good. And I think that's why he's there, is to create openings for Rangers. So apparently it's his work rate. He's not working hard enough.
I don't know.
I disagree with that. I think he's been good for games. I don't think there's much missing from his game just now. I think he's been performing well. I think it's a bit harsh to home in on him. There's a few that Rangers are missing just now, to be fair. And obviously they've got their injury problems. I think they're really missing Aribo just now. I think he started off really well at the beginning of the season. He looked good in the early matches. I think he really kind of bulked up over the summer as well. He was kind of given something different in attack, but I think they've kind of missed him. Roof as well looked really good in the games that he started to kind of come into something before his injury. He looked impressive. And then there's Jack as well. I mean, they're always going to miss Ryan Jack. He's kind of the anchor in midfield. He always kind of gets him well drilled. So I think they are struggling a wee bit in terms of injuries to kind of work around that and reshape. But no,
they've got a couple of injuries, but I mean, that first 11 they named is basically, it could be their first 11.
Oh yeah, I mean they've got more than just a couple of injuries, but that's the thing, that they still name a very, very strong first starting 11 that you would never really kind of blink at any other week. And
it's still not a team that would be Gerrard's preferred 11, given who he's picked for the start of the season.
So
when you bring in
a number of players,
I don't know. It's
the only ones that I think would not normally start would be Hellander. I think he wants to play Balogun at the back. McLaughlin seems to have taken over from McGregor. Maybe McGregor will get back in. And then Morelos wasn't playing at the moment because he's at it. So then you have
Kamara in place of Ryan Jack. You also have Arfield coming in.
A very good player, I can do
and
that.
And then Morelos, who'd only really played midweek against Red Imps, and then at the weekend. And yeah, okay, he scored. But I don't know, I kind of agree with Laura. I think Rangers were missing Ryan Jack. I know Kamara was kind of at fault for the first goal for Hibs when... Martin Boyle, Barisic as well, to be fair, because Martin Boyle's first touch was so heavy. I felt like Barisic, I don't know if Boyle had got into his head a wee bit, but if Barisic had just been a bit more aggressive with his defending, he could have got the ball. But Kamara could have also doubled up. I think they spoke about it in Sports Scene. Could have doubled up before Boyle put it in for Dre Wright to open the scoring. And yeah, Rangers losing the clean sheet records, but
they're not struggling at all. They've had seven clean sheets in a row, and then they come up against a team who've taken them on properly for basically the first time in the season, and they've dropped points. Like I don't think, and they don't have excuses of injuries. That first 11 is better than 10 other teams in the league by miles.
Yeah,
and like, it's just that Hibs took them on, and also I mean. Like, they made it difficult, Hibs. All you got to do is block those sort of lanes. And then we're talking about this lack of killer instinct they've had over the last little while. Boyle did very well against him. Nisbet was good, we discussed. I thought Ryan Porteous was excellent and was going right into them. And that you had at the end of the game...
We weren't happy about that.
Well, was it? Gerrard and Tavernier refusing to talk to him as he went in.
I have to say, some of the images coming out on Twitter at the weekend were hilarious. Like Porteous, clearly just a proper wind-up merchant, just smiling at all of them. Like, he is a proper wind-up merchant.
Almost like he's replacing like Scott Brown's role as the one that winds up Rangers the most.
You need that in a team, a player
exactly,
like that, do you?
This is the kind of pantomime side of things that you've got to enjoy. This goes back, though, doesn't it? Quite a few clashes between Hibs and Rangers that Portis has been responsible for like a few harsh tackles and maybe been responsible for some injuries that have been caused in the Rangers team. And look, there's never been there's no love lost here. It's he's got history, he's got past.
Well, it was Steven Gerrard who said that he accused Tavernier of Ryan Porteous supposedly accused Tavernier of being a bad loser.
Oh wow! Harsh words. No wonder you couldn't talk to him again.
That's gotta hurt.
Even he sounds like an absolutely bad loser after that. Jeez, imagine not talking to someone who said that to you. There must be so many worse things said in the football pitch than that.
But then Gerrard, I mean, it was playground stuff. Gerrard goes. Responded with like, oh, I think Ryan Porteous got sent off in the last game where we beat them comfortably, so I think he's the bad loser. That's not verbatim, but
it's so lame.
But it's interesting. Porteous doesn't need to be doing this kind of stuff though, because he is. I actually think he does. He's a really good footballer.
But actually, they got a result raw, that probably helps. But that helps though. You've got to be careful not to get sent off and not cross the line. And there's
maybe he's got an insight that Christopher Ayer's off to AC Milan and thinks that he can try and wrangle a move to Celtic.
Well, this is it. Like, what Porteous is doing is exactly the kind of stuff that Alan McGregor was doing last season. The kind of stuff that you get like heaps of Rangers players doing all the time. Like, you can't
Like terrier that you want in your team that winds up the opposition. That's what every team wants. And every opposition absolutely hates him for it. I'm all for this.
As long as it's within it's the thing with football, right? I hate playing against teams who are aggressive and they just want to like destroy people. But if they are doing it within the game, like it's the battle within the game, then it's fine. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like, did you see the off the ball incident that between him and Morelos?
Yes.
Because it looked a bit like a headbutt, but there was no real cameras picked it up very well. Yeah, I mean the wide sports.
It was one of those where you see it in every single game. The defender gives the centre forward a little bit of a nudge to let him know that he's there, and Morelos goes down. But Rangers face Willem II next in Europe. We'll speak about that more later. And Hibs go to Dingwall. So. The glamour of Scottish football sometimes. But it was, we mentioned it earlier on, JJ against Laura on Sunday. We all thought it would be 1-0 to Aberdeen because it's always 1-0 to Aberdeen. Paddy Power said that was the most likely outcome. But Motherwell had other ideas and he scored all three goals in the first 22 minutes to resign Aberdeen to their second defeat of the season. Mm. I mean, 22 minutes for Aberdeen to forget, but it was all a bit of a confusing start to the day because... It looks like Scott McKenna could be away from Aberdeen finally.
He's gone. Is it official? It's $3 million up front from Nottingham Forest, $2 million add-ons that are apparently they're very realistic that will definitely hit it with a 20% sell-on fee. Which if he does well, and he will, especially in the Championship, and he gets taken up by Burnley or something like that. That could be a decent little bit of money for him. If it's a long contract as well.
It was a surprise to me. As soon as I looked at Aberdeen's back line to see Ross.
Rory.
In the right back position, which I was
Well, he's played there a few times this season already. As well. But this is the thing, and a lot of Aberdeen fans are getting wound up with this, right?
What's going on?
Well, exactly, it's the thing. So he signed Rory McCrory and put him in field next to Lewis Ferguson, and that has been when Aberdeen have played their best football I've seen in a long time. Because you get composure, good touch, a bit of aggression there, a bit of leadership, a bit of determination, like running just sets the tone for everything. And then he's moved him out to right wing back, he's played right back, but the whole team changed up and you can see the huge difference. Like Ash Taylor coming for McKenna and straight away you lose a bit of composure on the ball. It's just not as good a player. Tommy Holman coming out was a big thing as well. And then you had, Funso Ojo, who passes forwards maybe once a game. He has no aggression. There's nothing aggressive about him whatsoever. Not that you need to be like flying into slide tackles, but he just looks like you could like blow him over. He never goes in hard. And like Motherwell had the run of that midfield in the first half. Three changes at halftime was the minimum you could have done. And it's the surprise was Ojo, Taylor. And McGinn, it was a shame McGinn came off. But like, I mean, Motherwell just took advantage of them from the very start. You saw the difference between what Campbell could bring and what Aberdeen had was...
Well, Laura, you were singing the praises of Alan Campbell and he was excellent again in this game. But Motherwell just seemed to punish Aberdeen for every single mistake that they could make. They were absolutely excellent.
Yeah, it feels like when I went on Twitter last night, once I got home from Aberdeen, it felt like everyone was just praising Alan Campbell. It felt like kind of started something brilliant. Last week. And now people are finally realising how good he is. It's kind of like Motherwell's best kept secret in Scottish football is how good this boy is. No, it was. I think it was a long time coming, to be honest. Like, spirits were never low during the kind of the bad run at the start of the season. There was never, like, heads never really went down. Confidence wasn't gone. But it just kind of felt like everyone was just waiting for it to come. It was just waiting for it to click. And it happened on Sunday. Everything just kind of clicked into place. And I mean, we were all kind of joking, going, what is this? We've landed from Ireland in some parallel universe called the season 1920. But I mean, that's just, like, we were having a laugh with it. It was great. It was very much hard work finally paid off. Everyone kind of learned from their mistakes, really kind of came together. I thought some of the boys, Alan Campbell was getting all the praise, but there's boys like Tony Watt, I think, was so hard working off the ball.
He was excellent,
I was kind of talking about last week, that if you're not a striker scoring goals, you're criticised for it. It's very easy just to kind of see it as black and white like that. But Tony Watt, his work rate was incredible, the way he kind of drove that team on. So there was a lot of boys, Bevis McGabby as well, to see him scoring his first goal for Motherwell, that was a great moment as well. Because he's
played well, that boy, as well.
Yeah, he's done well since he's came back into the team again. So, no, the atmosphere's great, and it was surprising, especially inside 22 minutes to have the game wrapped up. It's not really kind of the Motherwell way of late, but it's
great. And the thing with it was, like, so I would say Motherwell were the better team, but like to a man, they were the better players in the day. But then you look at the way it falls apart, the penalty was harsh, but it's a penalty, like it is. And then Joe Lewis, maybe like the first time I've ever seen him do that, where he kicks the ball straight into him, which is a stupid goal, and that's your 2-0 down, you're in trouble. And it was a set piece, wasn't it? Third?
Yeah.
Was it from a corner?
Yeah,
was it from the first phase? Yes. First ball in?
Yeah, first ball in.
McGabby.
That's the kind of thing you miss when you don't have maybe McKenna there. I don't know, it's just, you can see why he makes the changes. Like, Motherwell deserve a win. Aberdeen just, why? I don't know why he had to change it all. Maybe tired legs, you'd say, from the European game. But Motherwell had a European game.
Motherwell have played 120 minutes.
Imagine changing your team so much and then it all goes wrong within 22 minutes. How do you recover from that? It's very, very difficult. But that's credit to Motherwell for being so clinical.
A lot of times this season we've complained that we've not had luck on our side, and it's small things like that. As you're saying, a bad pass from the goalkeeper, a good ball in from a corner. There's games earlier this season where we watched easily 20 odd set pieces, like corners getting swung in, and nothing was coming off for us at all. And you're thinking, what's the point in even getting a corner, because we know it's not going to happen. So to actually see it come off in the same game as a pack pass, as a penalty early on in the first few minutes, these are all kind of luck that all just kind of comes together, and then you build in confidence from that. I don't think it's got anything really to do with the game time during the week, because, I mean, as you're saying, both teams travelled, so both teams had the exhaustion from that. But then Motherwell played 120 minutes of a very challenging game, and you could just kind of look at that and go, well, look, the confidence from that probably did the boys massive, like, in terms of how well it was. Like, they came away from that on a complete high to pull that off. So it's lasted well.
Motherwell deserved the win. I think McKenna's made mistakes, and he'll realise he shouldn't have made the changes he made. So looking at the Y-Scout, looking at XG, and looking where the table is, it's weirdly that every single team apart from Celtic, Rangers and Hibs is shooting under their expected goals, but Aberdeen are bottom in the table. There's XG of 6.25, is the lowest of any team in the league with 5 goals scored. Motherwell are doing alright. 8.84 is their XG, but they scored 6. So it'll balance out, but I mean, it's okay, Kilmarnock are shooting above it as well, actually. I've just told a lie there. But yeah, so Aberdeen need to play their best team to be able to get back to that attacking football we were getting a couple of weeks ago. It did not work against Motherwell. And then next up is meant to be Sporting Lisbon. Good luck, lads.
Let's hope that Motherwell, Laura, you're saying that they're finally getting the rubber of the green. Let's hope the luck continues for them, because they've got a tough ask in Israel against Hapoel Beersheva. But we'll move on, because it's time to talk about Lauren Shankland, finally.
Everyone remembers that time you've had that peach of an accumulator looking good only for, oh, and the keeper's let it slip through his legs in the 94th minute. Or the right back has to pull on the gloves and face a penalty. Or Man United have again conceded a late equaliser. But with Paddy Power's Acca Cracker, you get a free bet if one leg of your fourfold plus Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Minimum odds of 1-5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Excludes shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven. Listen to it totally ad-free via The Athletic.
Look like they have the taste for more. That's good trickery from Hacks across the six-yard area. Cleared away again. Chalmers will go to collect. Tate flying in there. Three kicks being given. Tate unhappy with that. Was a straight red. Colin Stephen, the referee, gives a red card to Richard Tate. It's St Mirren's second of the season.
Mickey Mellon says Lauren Shankland is Scotland's number nine after he contributed to Dundee United's 2-1 win over St Mirren. Adrian Spurla added a second for United before Richard Tate was sent off and Dylan Connolly gave St Mirren a chance with a goal.
And what a sending off, Jesus.
Wow, I know. Do you know what? See, when I missed the initial tackle, and when I looked at it...
The
replay... And it was slowed down. I thought the feet were down, the studs were down, it was two-footed, but I didn't understand how he went into that tackle. I didn't think it was a red at first. Then I watched that again. Totally a red.
Hey, do you remember on the old like FIFA 97 games when you could push a button and it was like deliberate foul? It was like an attack.
Yes. Yeah.
You just do it all over the pitch, it was funny. That's what
like fly kick someone in the face and you're like, oh, sometimes you get a yellow card in it. It was great.
Oh man.
It's just so needless from a player that's that experienced.
In the corner, there was no need.
I think Goodwin admitted after the match, though, that it looked like frustration.
Did it? Did it look like frustration?
It was the embodiment of frustration, he said.
Oh my God, yeah.
That's what he said. But yeah.
Well, we should talk about Lawrence Shankland's finish, because that is something else.
Beautiful.
Into the air, drops for Shankland. There it is. Lawrence Shankland with his first Scottish Premiership goal. He scored 24 in 26 games in the Championship last season. And that one is a stunner from Lauren Shankland.
Absolute class, really. But
Champions League final quality, that one.
Yeah, but also, I mean, really poor defending. For him to have so much space.
Oh, come on! No!
What?
He's just hooked it in, the side volley. He's turned like 270 degrees to be able to put that in.
I'm taking nothing away from the finish.
You
but
are.
For not to be a player in black and white on his shoulder...
he drops back and they're holding their line, but the last line's holding their line. He drops away into space further back, which maybe you could say the midfield, maybe someone in the next line should be on him. But I don't think they're set up too badly. You should probably be maybe you're right. Yeah.
Oh, it's brilliant for Shankland. Absolutely brilliant. I'm really really pleased that he's got off the mark, but I still think he's a little bit raw. I think he's not 100% yet, because in this game he had a couple of other chances which just felt a little bit. Like he was trying too hard. I think there's so much expectation on him right now that he just needs to... I mean, that goal that he scored is absolutely announced himself, and he just needs to do his work quietly and not put too much expectation on his own shoulders, because...
He's not being quiet. He's going to score more goals.
Well,
he's missed
so much time as well because of being out injured that everyone's kind of got this eyes on him. Can he perform in the Premiership? All this criticism he's faced whenever he's had Scotland call-ups, and it's like, oh, is he a Premiership player? Can he actually do the top division? And he's probably felt that pressure on his shoulders coming in and thought, right, I want to kind of hit the ground running. And he's done it in spectacular fashion. He's done it exactly the way a striker should. And now it's about him getting kind of match sharpness now and building up from that. Mm.
But obviously, I think we should. Talking about St Mirren and talking about XG in the last little bit, we're talking about Aberdeen Motherwell. The same thing seems to be happening this season for St Mirren, as in they are creating chances, and so that their expected goals is 8.44, right, according to Wyscout. But they've only scored 5, and it was the same problem as last season, is that they should have scored way more than they did, and I wonder what's going to happen, because they were close to going down last season. So
this is it. Like, 4 straight defeats for St Mirren. It's not good reading. And this is when you think the likes of their chief executive, Tony Fitzpatrick, before the season even starts, says, we will finish in the top 6. I mean, that's just so much pressure that you're putting on Jim Goodwin's shoulders. But Jim Goodwin's obviously said that they can finish in the top 6 with their side. But yeah. Do you guys think they can this season?
I think they can. I don't think they will.
I think, yeah, I think they can. And I don't think they deserve criticism for wanting to and having that desire and coming out and admitting that they've got that desire. So, I mean, it's always kind of, it's easy to say, oh, they want to get top six and they aren't quite making it. So let's all laugh at them and say, oh, that was daft for them to come out and say stupid quotes like that. I don't think that's the case. It's great to hear that kind of positivity. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Like, everyone will be frustrated by it, but it's good to have that desire.
I'm not laughing at the quote. It's just I remember Alan Stubbs even coming out and saying after he got sacked after four games last season, which I think they lost all four or something like that at the start of the season, that that was an unwanted comment, because Fitzpatrick has said it before. So it's just one of those things, sometimes maybe you don't want too much.
I don't think it's a manager's dream to hear that. I think the manager's the one person that does not want to hear that.
Well, anyway, Dundee United will travel to Hamilton next, whereas St Mirren will host Kilmarnock. So we move on to Celtic, where there was goals aplenty at Celtic Park. It was against Livingston, who took the lead thanks to a Holt penalty, but Celtic back quickly to lead 3-1. Tension was hammed up, though, for the last 10 minutes as Serrano scored for Livingston. Thank you very much. Well, thanks to Abby, actually. She put that in there. Serrano ham. Very tasty. A very tasty finish. But Celtic
explain
with
the joke. Because ham, yeah?
I'm hungry, yeah, right?
All
right. Lennon said after the game that Celtic made life hard for themselves. It kind of feels like that's been the story of their season. They're winning, but it's not looking like it's easy for them.
I know. I think they'll find form at the right time. It doesn't look quite all there yet, and I'd imagine at some point it's going to click. And the thing is, they're still winning every single game. I don't think any Celtic fans need to worry about it. But yeah, I agree with what you just said. Yeah.
I was kind of reading some of the Celtic fans' replies to Celtic's full-time tweet on Saturday. And some of it is a wee bit over the top. I think so. I wrote down some of the things they were saying.
For Celtic fans, no.
Yeah. This is a disaster waiting to happen. Papering over the cracks. It's going to be a long season. And absolute shambles was maybe my favourite one. I mean, to win 3 points and still call it absolute shambles, it's a wee bit spoiled.
Yeah. Are they not
spoiled with 9 title wins in a row, yeah, 9 trophies in a row?
is it not the case, though, with Celtic fans that with the amount of money spent over the years and the fact that they're coming up against a side bottom of the table, that they shouldn't have been cutting it so close at 3-2 by the end of the game?
It was a penalty and an absolute rocket. Like, you can't...
Yeah. And Livingston do cause problems for a lot of teams in the league. I don't think at this stage of the season we should be calling them, you know, the team at the bottom of the table. The table is so tight right now that that's not really like a tag that we should be giving them. But then at home, yes, Celtic probably should be a lot more comfortable. But it's as you're saying, it was a penalty and a very good goal. And they still got the points.
It wasn't the only really good goal in this game, because Callum McGregor, God, what a hit that was as well. Yeah. I would say Serrano wins it. I think Serrano has the best strike of the game.
That was Julian Serrano's header. Gets it back. Great hit. Great goal. His first for Livingston. And how about this for a left footer?
I like that Laura's been saying we shouldn't be calling Livingston the team bottom of the table, even though they're bottom of the table. It doesn't make any sense.
No, don't give them the tag as the team at the bottom
of the
table.
What do you mean? They're bottom of the table.
Factually they are, but I mean, come on. Like, teams were like so close on goal difference. I mean, Motherwell were bottom on goals scored for a week.
No, but you know what I mean.
Should we point out Ryan Christie's impact on this game? Because I think he's having another superb season. 2 assists and a goal in this game. The guy is on fire right now, which is, Laura, you'll be pleased. You know, another good reason that Scotland has a player of this quality.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's one that I've always said I'd play up front for Scotland. As much as I know he struggled in that position of late for Celtic, I don't know where he was playing on Saturday. I didn't see the full game.
He was playing up front with a Yeti. No Edouard.
That's still promising, because I would like to see him in a very attacking role for Scotland. So to hear that he is adapting into that role a bit more comfortably, I think that's great. He's a fantastic player. I think he also had a shout for a handball in the first half, was it? He was like,
yeah, when it was nil.
Oh, that's never.
I don't think it was.
He lost points for me for that one. I love Ryan Christian. I think he's such a magic player that I thought he'd be player of the season last year. Honestly, everything he does is so, so smart, clever, quick, right on it. But you can't claim for a penalty when you would mash the ball off someone from 5 yards and he's on the ground.
Yeah, was Brown just kind of fell on the ball?
I don't know, JJ. I think if it's happening in your team and you're on the pitch, you would claim. Just like you claim for a throw-in, you claim for a corner kick, even if it's game off you.
I'd say the Marley Watkins one for Aberdeen, you can go like when it's for your team, you're like, it's a penalty, and it's against, like, it never is. But that one, I think everyone would agree, it's never a penalty. That one.
A few other bits of news regarding Celtic, the likes of apparently AC Milan putting in a 14 million bid for Christopher Ayer, and also that the Odson Edouard was left out of the team. Well, he was on the bench, but he was tired, according to Neil Lennon.
Well, you know,
do you think Christopher Ayer is worth 14 million pounds? Is he not worth more than that?
I think he's potentially worth more. I really rate Ayer very highly. I think he's not Van Dijk, but he is a absolutely a player who can play I mean probably Champions League level and do well in a team. He's maybe, I think, a good time for me to move somewhere would be now, because then he can get a little bit of coaching that he needs before he's too old to really take it in. Not that you stop learning, but players learn stuff young and then that's what they play like. And Lennon says 40 million is not enough. I don't know, I sold him in Football Manager for about 70 to AC Milan, so I think he's right.
Football Manager is a good gauge, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, Ayeti's came in for Celtic too, and I think that's 4 goals in 5 games for him. When you look at the likes of Edouard being on the bench, the goal that Ayeti scored, he looks like he could be, you know, the perfect replacement for Edouard on first showing.
In my fantasy team, yeah.
Which is going so well, JJ, for you.
Yeah, let's move on, yeah.
Celtic will face Hibs next. Livingston take on St Johnstone. But 2 more matches still to come. Ross County's 5 games without a win came to an end at St Johnstone as Ian Vigers scored the only goal of the game with a free kick. A huge 3 points for Stuart Kettlewell and a clean sheet. So I don't know what Ross County did so well here other than defend, because I think they only had 4 touches in the box. St Johnstone were really unlucky in this game because they were by far the better team, but it was a game full of really poor quality.
Yes, and the goal was awful.
Well, yeah, Vigers is lucky for it to get accredited to him. I think it was...
I can't work out if the goalkeeper's done anything wrong there, because I don't know anything about goalkeeping. But surely, because the way the ball's hooked in from the right, from the set piece, so he's got to predict someone will head that to his left, but the ball is going to his right, yet it still ends up going past him. And as well, like, when you're embarrassed about something like that, the first thing you do is blame someone else. That's the first thing he does. Come on!
Well, the thing is, it's always down to defenders to attack. Somebody has to attack the ball, and you want your players to be attacking it, not the defence. The thing is, nobody attacked this ball, and it ended up getting
through
everyone.
It was too high for them all to hit, though. I thought it just bounces over everyone's head. It's just a little bit too high, but then the keeper has to read it. Like, you see it all the time. Like, even, I don't know, every single league in the world, that keepers get beaten by that. But I wonder, are we supposed to do something better? I can't say anything, because I don't know anything about goalkeeping.
I kind of feel like St Johnstone, the teams are kind of calling their bluff right now and kind of going, okay, right, come and have a go. What have you got? What are you made of? And then St Johnstone kind of don't really know what to do about that. Teams are sitting back and allowing St Johnstone to have the ball, and they kind of panic. It's kind of a bit like me when I'm playing FIFA and I get anywhere near kind of 30 yards in front of goal and I just go, oh my God, and I do something and I lose all composure, and it's kind of like they are me right now. I mean, they did it with Motherwell, when Motherwell had St Johnstone at Fir Park, they did the same. They kind of turned the game around and went, okay, fine, you're the visiting team, but we're going to give you the ball and we're going to let you come at us. And they didn't really know what to do with it, and it kind of feels like Ross County did the same at McDermott Park at the weekend. There was a lot of kind of good build-up from St Johnstone, but nothing really came of it.
No end product. I mean, this is the thing. They brought in Stevie May. They brought him back from Aberdeen. They've got Hendry in there, and the efforts that they do have, they're not even close. They didn't really trouble the goalkeeper at all in this game. But this is the thing, like the whole game was just so lacking in quality. And that's why I realise it's such a huge 3 points for Ross County, especially when you look at the likes of their next couple of games. You know, they've got Aberdeen, Rangers and then Hibs, you know, all teams in the top six already. And Ross County are sitting in a good position already, despite, you know, how many games it was without a win. Five it was. So to be sitting in the table where they are and then getting that win and these games that are coming up, Kettlewell got a little bit of breathing space when maybe at the start of the season we would have expected them to be struggling at the bottom half of the table.
Yeah, I mean, they've got Aberdeen and Hibs, but they're home both times against Aberdeen and Hibs. So, if the Aberdeen turn up that played yesterday, these are winnable games for Ross County. They're in a very good position in the league right now, sitting fifth. As I say, a very tight table, but they've got teams creeping up behind them that could push them down very quickly if they do actually stumble in these three fixtures. I think there's a very, very big few weeks coming up for them to kind of set out their intentions for the season.
Well, it's a big game for St Johnstone next as well, because they face Livingston, a game that they should really be looking at trying to win, but Livingston will fancy their chances too. But the last match we go to is at Killie, where they were 10 men against Hamilton. But Greg Kilty put Kilmarnock ahead before a Dauphin equalised for Hamilton. Brophy was then sent off, but Hamilton couldn't capitalise on their advantage. And Kabamba, Nicky Kabamba, scored the winner for Kilty.
What a first touch. To say,
oh my God. What, do you mean? What? Do you mean for the goal or the first touch they had where he took the goal really well. Over the ball?
There's Burke. Kabamba's right through. Well, he's made a real mess of that, Nicky Kabamba, because he was in on goal. It's a beautiful pass from Chris Burke. And Kabamba won't want to see that back in the highlights.
Hilarious.
What do we have to add to it? I mean, he gets a pass through, he's clean through on goal, and the ball gets stuck under his foot and he rolls over it, which, I mean, is obviously very embarrassing for him. He's been sharing a few of those Twitter accounts, things like high quality Scottish football, whatever it was, I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, that's right.
We said Kabamba, I think he's all right as a player. He took his goal well. Kilmarnock, Alex Dyer was really impressed with his team. Brian Rice was, again, really critical of his team afterwards, saying how they're making stupid passes. I mean, the ball that they give away for the goal was a pass that's just hit across the pitch, which was never going to make it in the first place. It's a bad decision, but also badly hit.
Yeah, I think Aki's deserves the criticism right now, though. That it's been very inexperienced sort of performances they've been putting in.
They've got very inexperienced players.
Yeah, but I mean, they've scored one deflected goal in open play in seven games now. I mean, even for a team that everyone obviously at the start of the season tips to go down, that's still not good enough. Their attacking performances have been very poor. I mean, they looked like the team that were down 10 men.
It's a bit unfair considering Hamilton have beaten Motherwell and Livingston so far this season.
Yeah.
In the last four games, they've won two and lost two. In the last, was it seven games, they've lost three, four, five of them and won two. To pick up 6 points so far this season is decent for Hamilton.
The other thing as well is that you just said that they've only scored like one open play. According to who scored? Hamilton's, well, obviously not, but Hamilton and Ross County have both scored zero, and you're saying Ross County are playing really well. They're exactly the same. Like, Ross County have scored four set pieces, Hamilton have scored four as well. Ross County, their other goals have been two penalties and an own goal. Yet Ross County are getting.
The difference is Ross County are pulling off points and they're not struggling as a result.
Yeah, but it balances out over a season, and Hamilton have got very.
Bear in mind, Laura, that Hamilton are only 2 points off Motherwell.
Yeah.
Cut Hamilton some slack, eh?
God, she's gone from anti-Aberdeen to anti-Hamilton. It's awful. We've got to stand up for Hamilton.
We're not analysing Motherwell's creativity right now. We're analysing Hamilton. I'm allowed to criticise them for that.
Something I would like to mention is just like, how good is Chris Burke? Like, my God. Like, that run for the first goal for Greg Kilty. I mean, Kilty will take the goal, but it's all down to Burke's good play. And we've already seen him absolutely smash in a free kick this season, which was top quality.
So he's 36 now, Burke.
Yeah, but he's just, he is the talisman for Kilmarnock now.
Yeah.
He makes everything tick. It was Kilty last time out where Kilmarnock lost, but I mean, well, I can't believe Bark is just finding the form of his life.
He can give you a stat that'll tell you how much they depend on him. 41% of Kilmarnock's play goes down the right-hand side, which is where Burke plays. It is like overwhelmingly the majority of their play. So Johnston's goes down the right as well, actually, weirdly. But I'm not really sure why that is. It's a different team.
It'll be McNamara, the fullback.
It is going to be that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very, really heavy. Shouldn't be lying
something
on the side that much.
I have to say as well, really surprised that Nicky Kabamba seems like he's an all right player, because when he first moved to Kilmarnock, I almost fell off my chair. Like, honestly,
were you trying to control the football at Kabamba?
a little bit. Yeah. The thing is, like, when he first came, he didn't have exactly a superb season in the National League with Hartlepool. He'd scored a couple of goals, but it wasn't like he was that good. And I was really surprised that he was coming up to this level. But I don't know what it is, if it's just his stature, that he's so strong that he makes it so difficult for defenders, because it's very difficult to get the ball off of him. But he was a sprinter as a youth, as a youngster, and he chose football. So he's actually really deceptively quick as well. So I'm surprised, but pleasantly so, because Alex Dyer obviously has kept tabs on him from his time in lower league football. And I kind of hope that he can be the main foil with him and Kilty up front. So we'll wait and see if he proves to be still a good player. And I'm just surprised. But those games are done, so we're going to talk about Europe now. Yeah!
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show from Muddy Knees Media and The Athletic.
Four intrepid explorers head to Europe this week with the hope of making it to the group stage of the Europa League. How many will remain? Well, to help us answer that question, European football expert and good friend Kieran Canning joins us now.
Hello.
Hello. So some of these sides we know, some of these sides we don't know that well. So let's just go through them quickly, Kieran. We've got Riga hosting Celtic. Sporting Lisbon will face Aberdeen in Portugal. We've got Hapoel Beersheva taking on Motherwell, which is quite a journey for them. And then it's Willem. Willem, how do you pronounce their name? Because I would say Willem 2.
Willem 2.
Willem 2. Willem 2 against Rangers. So what can you tell me about some of these teams?
Well, we'll start off with Riga, probably, because they're probably the least well-known to people, because they were only founded in 2014. So to put that into context, Neil Lennon already had one full stint of a Celtic manager. But that was because they were the merger of two other clubs. So a bit like a very successful Latvian Inverness Cali Thistle, if you will. In terms of a name, then you would think, yeah, even given some of Celtic's problems in Europe over the past few years and qualifiers, they should easily go through. But there is an alarm bell for Celtic fans in that Riga actually beat Copenhagen 1-0 at home in the playoff round for the Europa League last year. And Copenhagen obviously went on to put Celtic out of the Europa League. So in this sort of one-off tie format and playing away from home, you know, anything can happen. That said, they were beaten by Maccabi Tel Aviv in the Champions League qualifying already this season, and just beat San Marino side Trefiori last week, in quite a strange game, because it was being played on the Thursday night when heavy winds or strong winds started blowing away the stadium, and they had to come back and do it all again like 9 o'clock on the Friday morning before the draw for the playoff round was completed. Yeah. So there's all sorts of potential complications there. You know, will there still be a stadium standing for the game to go ahead in? But as we'll come on to discuss with quite a lot of these teams that are facing Scottish opposition this week, there's also the problems related to COVID. So Riga's manager might miss the game because he's had to go back to Russia. He missed the Trefiori match, so they don't know yet if he's going to be back in time. But there's even bigger problems for some of the other sides that we'll come on to talk about.
Spartak Moscow's former boss Oleg Kononov, he's probably not going to be in the dugout. So it looks like a really tough tie on paper. But what are the chances of Aberdeen, you know, getting a result in Lisbon?
Well, they might not have to, Andrew, because
this is why you're on the show, Kieran, for your knowledge.
Sporting is 14th game at the weekend was cancelled. They recorded 10 positive cases in the middle of last week. So as we well know as Scottish football fans from the Czech Republic, I was going to call it the Czech Republic fiasco, but you know, we all know that was a glorious victory for Steve Bloxman over in Olivets a couple of weeks ago. The UEFA rules say that a game can go ahead as long as a team can field 13 players, including one goalkeeper, you know, important one for St Mirren fans there. So it seems like Sporting probably will be able to put together a team. They're obviously going to have more tests this coming week. The latest I had read about it was that Aberdeen will have to travel and might not even find out until the Wednesday if the game will go ahead on the Thursday. But obviously if Sporting are missing a whole host of players, either because of tested positive themselves or in self-isolation because they've been in contact with teammates who have tested positive, that's going to make the game an awful lot easier than it first seems on paper. I mean, Sporting, although they haven't had the best couple of years, are still a very strong team. They finished fourth in the Portuguese League last season. So I think that one's very much going to depend on who's available for Sporting to play.
And of course, Aberdeen are going to have to come back after losing pretty comprehensively against Motherwell as well. So they're going to need to give their fans something to shout about. So what about Motherwell up against Hapoel Beersheva, who have been up against Scottish opposition in recent years, haven't they?
Yeah, well, for Scottish football fans are probably best known for the epic tie they had against Celtic in the qualifying for the Champions League in 2016-17. Celtic won that tie sort of clinging on despite losing 2-0 in Israel, and Hapoel Beersheva have tended to be very strong at home, which is, you know, unfortunate for Motherwell that they've just been drawn away in this this one-off tie. That season that they played Celtic, they actually they got to the last 32 of the Europa League, knocking out Southampton and Inter Milan on the way, so no mugs at all. But since then, a couple of seasons, their European results haven't been as good. They've tended to get through a few qualifying rounds and then sort of follow the final hurdle before qualifying for the group stages of either the Champions League or the Europa League. Finished fourth in the Israeli League last season, but Israel is another country which has gone back into lockdown. UEFA said that that won't affect the game going ahead. Motherwell will still be able to travel, so at least there should be any threat to that match in terms of the COVID procedures. But yeah, certainly a very tough tie for Motherwell to try and get through.
And Villeneuve against Rangers, what do we expect in that one?
Again, something that Scottish football fans can appreciate. They were the great beneficiaries of the Dutch calling their season early, like we did. They were only 3 points ahead of the team chasing them, having played a game more, but on points per game, the way the season finished, they managed to qualify for Europe. Steven Gerrard actually spoke last week. They have a dangerous Greek striker called Evangelos Pavlidis, I believe, who scored twice against Progress Niederkorn, another team known to Rangers fans last week, who they thrashed in the previous round. And he also scored twice at the weekend as they won 4-0. They beat Ajax away last season, so very capable of causing an upset on their day. But they're quite an attack-minded team, which should suit Rangers based off what we've seen in previous Europa League seasons. You know, Rangers have got a lot of very good results playing against teams that come at them, you know, that they sit in a little bit and counter-attack. It tends to be for Rangers that they struggle more when playing against a mass, you know, mass ranks of defence. So again, based off Rangers' Europa League results in recent seasons, you would expect them to go through. But again, this one-off format, playing the game away from home, anything can happen. And it is quite a difficult one based on the fact that, you know, Willem, because they don't have a huge European pedigree, you know, weren't a seeded team. But obviously, finishing fifth in the Dutch league, you know, shows that they do have some calibre.
Thanks a lot, Kieran. We'll see what happens on Thursday. So thanks a lot for speaking to us and letting us know the pronunciations of some of those teams as well.
Try my best.
Kieran Canning from the AFP. All right, time now to get the odds with Paddy Power with producer Abby. First up, we've just been speaking with Kieran about the Europa League. So what odds can you give me on a quadruple header of success in Europe, please?
Well, if I go through each individual match to begin with, Celtic are 1-5 to beat Riga, Rangers 4-6 to beat Willem, Motherwell though 10-3, that's when it goes in the opposite direction, Motherwell 10-3 to beat Hapoel Beersheva, and Aberdeen, even bigger odds, 17-2 to beat Sporting Lisbon. For the four of them to get through to the group stage, Paddy Power have got to that quite far out. It's 30-1 for a quadruple header of Scottish success in Europe.
Wow.
I mean, it's not happening, is it?
Yeah, that is...
Even with Sporting Lisbon riddled with coronavirus, there's still no way Aberdeen's getting through. I've no idea how Motherwell will get on against Hapoel Beersheva. I know nothing about them.
Yeah, So, and there's another round to go too. But there's also a big match at the weekend as Celtic face Hibs. What's the best price there?
Can Hibernian do what they did to Rangers to Celtic? Well, if you fancy the 2-2 draw, that's 18-1. However, it is more likely that Celtic will win this 2-0. That's 5-1. Celtic 1-4, Hibernian 17-2, and the draw 9-2.
Cool. Well, thanks, Abby. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. T's and C's apply. And when the fun stop, please stop. All right, fantasy football, Scotland time. This I can be quite happy this weekend because I had a good weekend.
Laura's really good at this.
Well, Laura had an unbelievable weekend last week, I think it was, when you got something like 75 points.
That was insane. And
in
then
contrast,
I
in contrast to JJ this week, who had a minus 16 point hit. I mean, how many transfers did you make?
Well, that would be 4 points per hit plus one free, so... I counted the maths in that five, I guess.
But, I mean, you must have been kind of happy to finish on minus two in the end.
I'm just really impatient, and I don't want to have to wait for ages to make all the changes I want to make. Obviously, you need to have Neer in. Obviously, you need to have Duffy in because he's scoring. And then my team, I'm looking at my team now, and I don't even like what I've done to it. And I've already taken a 16.8. Laura was telling me to get all the Rangers defenders in, so I was trying to do that. And then
I texted you last night saying, like, have you used your wild card yet? So you
I used that weeks ago. I told you.
What?
So you used
don't
that?
You listen to the podcast?
Games, JJ. We've got a whole season to go.
I know. We're definitely round three. Because I'm impatient and I want to win.
JJ, you're not going to win. Goodness. I'm in the league.
We'll see. How many points? So I made some bad decisions. It's a common recurring theme throughout my life. And not doing very well at fantasy football. Well, that's nothing new. Everyone should know that with me already.
I found, which is unfortunate for me, I'm finding it really difficult to replace players now because of the way that the transfer market works. You know, if players do really well, their values go up, and players that don't do well, their values go down. So I'm really struggling. Like, I have to find a replacement.
It's very
for
complicated,
Tate
yes.
It's so the one transfer for me though, because the fact that you only get one transfer a week, which is different from other fantasy games in other leagues, it means it's so much more of a tactical game, because you've got to be like, right, well, if I want, it's like, almost like playing chess where you're thinking three moves ahead. You're thinking, right, I want him out of my team, but then to be able to afford him, I need to take him out this week and then him out the following week. And it's just
the guy top of the league, the Totally Scottish Football League one, he takes like 8 point hits all the time. Because then I guess you gamble and you make the point. It's just, I think you've got to be a bit brave with it sometimes and quite wise. And unfortunately, those are neither of the things I'm good at. So, anyway.
I like how you know the theory, JJ, but you cannot apply it yourself.
This is it. This is all my, like, my world of football. I think I'm okay at analysing games. I can tell you how teams have done something, but I can't tell you what's going to happen.
This is the thing I found, and there's a guy I work with as well who's the same. You guys are really good at analysing actual games and being good at real football. But when it comes to fantasy, you try and apply real life football to fantasy football. Yeah. And it's a completely different game.
Well, I'm going to captain Andy Constantine from now on, and then we'll see who wins.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, as I'm sure none of you are
not
interested.
You.
No one listening to this is interested in our own little private league, but I jumped up to second place, desperately trying to reclaim top spot. Brannan's sitting up there. I'm only I'm only 2 points behind you, Brannan. But special mention for producer Abby, who doesn't have any Celtic or Rangers players in her team, and she got the most points out of the weekend, 33 in total.
That's good.
Which is pretty tasty. The average score of the weekend... Go on.
Well, one thing to consider for everyone is that Scott McKenna's off from Aberdeen, so, I mean, if you had him in your team, you want to get someone else in. People like Constantine's cheaper, but you can maybe look elsewhere. And I wonder whether it's worth not having Edouard in just now and having a Yeti. He just keeps scoring like a goal a game. He's really high up in that. Christie seems to be on form too.
So, really good point.
There we go.
Good point, JJ. Good point. I mean, I'm sure everyone's going to listen to you.
Well, exactly. what's Laura's tip for this week?
Oh, I've not looked at the fixtures actually to take it in properly to see who the remaining.
We'll do it very quickly so we get a good tip. I think that's interesting for the.
Hold on a second.
So yeah, so we've got Hamilton against Dundee United. So Dundee United's off the back of a good win, could be going into this game with Shankland, maybe going to score a few goals against Hamilton. Maybe we want to bring him in. Livingston will host St Johnstone. Tough one that. I've got McCrory in goal, so I might bring him back. That's definitely going to be 0-0. St Mirren, Kilmarnock, you've got Motherwell Rangers, so if you've got some Motherwell defenders, maybe want to take them out. Celtic against Hibs, so I've got a few Celtic players and a few Hibs players, that'll probably mean that I'm going to have a tough week. And then Ross County, Aberdeen. So yeah, maybe you do want to captain Considine, JJ.
Yeah, I would say the pick of that stands out is Livy at home to St Johnstone, so I would maybe recommend getting a Livy defender in. I think that
I've got Devlin.
He's on their rapido pitch against a team that's struggling. They could be a good shout for bringing in a Livy defender. I put Ross McCrory in my team before this week. Didn't do very well for me. But
you mean Rory?
Good old Rory. I like to think that I jinxed him by putting him in my team, though. And I jinxed him in real life by not getting me a lot of points.
Well, the good thing is he's not down as a defender, so you won't go into negative points for goals conceded, etc.
That is true.
So yeah, he's probably a good one to have anyway.
But if he does move back into a kind of more midfield attacking role, then you might find he gets you more points than playing in defence. Celtic Hibs, I don't know. I would stay clear of Celtic Hibs just now. I would keep my Celtic mainstays in. I don't know if I would maybe put, as I say, I've got Porteous on the bench because he was playing Rangers. I don't know if I'll bring him back in for the Celtic game. I think he might stay there for another week.
Well, I think that's enough fantasy football news, because that's the show. We're done. We're all over. Thank you so much for listening. All
happy birthday, Andrew. Very impressive.
Oh my God, you beat me to it. I couldn't believe it. We're going to get through the whole podcast and I was going to slag you all off for not saying happy birthday. It was my birthday today as well.
Hold on a minute, Andrew. I texted you to say happy birthday. I text you at home.
Yes,
on a minute.
But I
hold
want everyone to know about it. I want you to publicly say happy birthday on this medium.
I text you at 21 minutes past midnight. I was probably one of the first people to say happy birthday to you.
Yes, that's always a good thing. That's always a good thing, but still.
But happy birthday
still,
again.
I want to hear it on this. Thank you
happy
very much.
Happy birthday again.
And on that delightful note, we'll be back next week for more. Thanks for listening to The Little Kicks. Thanks for my birthday messages. Keep safe, keep it totally. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. You've been listening to The Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta, and be sure to check out our website, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Hello, listener. It's me, Matt Davis Adams, here to tell you why you need to be listening to The Totally Football League Show. But apparently, I've only got 30 seconds to do so. Reason one, we cover the most football of anyone. That's 72 clubs in total. Reason two, our panellists played actual football in the EFL. Whoa. And reason three, our music sounds like George Clooney is organising a heist. Oh, did I mention that we're now a bigger show than ever before, going out twice a week? Now that's more commitment to the EFL than even Sam Parkin gave as a player. How often are the games coming, Sam?
Saturday, Tuesday.
That's the Totally Football League Show, every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts. Did I do it?
Muddy Knees Media.